From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 27th day of July, 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. A bit later in the program, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible. And along the way, I'll bring you an update on USDA's $12 billion plan to help farmers out in the United States as it relates to trade and tariffs. And I'll have a commentary on that same subject, so stay with us right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On this Friday afternoon, let's check in to see what happened at the CME Group with Mike Zuzlo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, and traveling towards the great state, actually, I believe, in the state of Illinois at this point. Hey, good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
Todd, I'm in the Tesla station wagon 50 miles west of Jacksonville with all seven of the family.
All right. Well, that's good news. So you're west of Jacksonville.
We traded in the Prius.
That's good. So if you're west of Jacksonville, that means you came across a really devastated area in Missouri. What's that look like today?
It's as advertised on the crop conditions report. It is devastated, especially between St. Joe and Chillicothe. Gets a little bit better east of Brookfield, but then turns worse as you go east for the most part. Very uneven pollination. I was struck by Hannibal and Hull and just past Barry, quite a bit of uneven pollination. I was surprised by that based upon some of the preset maps, and I don't know whether it was planting issues or variety issues, but you know, we had talked about this on Commodity Week, and some of the other fellows had talked about how it was looking tougher and that we were really in need of a rain in the state of Illinois, and all I can say is if we don't get these good rains that are expected, I think the national yield of up in that 180 level, it's probably not going to happen because the trade's really counting on Illinois to pull most of the weight this year.
Yeah, so, and I hate to say it this way, but we've known for a while that the parts of Missouri, and there is a little bit, I think, of southern Iowa, though I haven't traveled through there and I haven't heard much about that as of late. Usually the state statistician from Iowa will discuss that area, but Missouri doesn't count so much. It just doesn't produce enough corn to work in counting. However, you're driving through an area now, and then that tongue kind of goes north of there of the dry area. That really can count, and it does make a difference on the national yields, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does, and this is one of the things that I wrote about on my blog over the first part of the week before all the good news from President Trump and his policy shift and the European Union policy shift, and I think it really goes back the next couple of weeks, given that we have technicals now in play that are pushing to the upside, stochastics, oscillators, the things that funds tend to look at, they're more positive. You've got fundamentals underneath you in the form of if you miss rain from some of these key areas you're talking about, we can, I think, dial it in terms of a potential loss of yield and bring that back. And so we join the rest of the Northern Hemisphere with crop issues. And I think this is where Monday's crop conditions becomes extremely important, as does the next 5 days of rain. I think that between the technicals and the calendar that we're looking at between now and the next report, I think you got to be really watching this market to, if we get rallies above $4 in beef corn and above $9 in note beans, get something on the books. And again, I'd say pick up a trial on the website and take a look at the blog for more specifics.
Yeah, those are levels I think that producers, well, $4 for corn maybe, but they might be hesitant at $9 for beans still.
Well, I think that may be true, but I think that if you look at the crop insurance, most policies nowadays will give you unlimited downside. And if you would pick up a bought put, leave your basis open, don't sell any cash because you don't know your yield and you don't really want to hedge, I don't think, a basis at this point in new crop beans, you know, you may be able to win on both sides if the market goes lower. So your net revenue could actually be better than you expect, even at these lower prices. I think that's kind of the directional mindset I'm taking, is I could see why you'd want to wait to 410, that gap in beef corn, to really get serious about hedging corn. But with the beans, I don't think you want to leave that wide open. I'm just too nervous about China, and I'm too nervous about the bean yield potential. The extend beans are really showing themselves up this year, and it's in a large area of the Corn Belt this year.
On that note about China, what did the exports for the week show? Anything good?
No, not much. But in fact, today, I think that was probably the best export news we got when we had unknown sales in both corn and beans. It really took away the sting from the poor weekly export sales in the meal and the poor weekly export sales in the corn. So I actually think we brought things back around just by those two announcements today. But exports so far are not lighting up the board yet. And I think this is where I have patience on the corn, I have patience on the wheat, but with the soybeans, it's a ticking type of scenario where time is of the essence, because we're pretty certain we're going to lose a lot of bean demand out of China. So can we pick that up anywhere else? And I think this is where the real issue with the trade, I think, is NAFTA. We have to get NAFTA done at this stage of the game in order to say, okay, we don't need to take these prices much lower than we've already been. And I think that's kind of why I would like to hedge between now and the report. If we get those price rallies, because then I don't have to worry as much if NAFTA doesn't come to fruition by the end of August, early September, like the market's starting to believe it's going to happen.
Is it okay if it's just an agreement with Mexico? That's what I think maybe the president has been saying, but that's certainly what Secretary Perdue said on Tuesday in a teleconference, that he thought that sometime in September there probably, or maybe even August, actually it was August, that there would be some kind of bilateral agreement with Mexico.
You know, I think so. I think that between the wheat and the corn and the meal and the hogs, certainly Mexico is more important, but Canada is such a massive ethanol buyer of ours. If we don't do something with Canada, I think we almost have to have that E15 waiver for all 12 months to kind of offset that, so that the domestic demand offsets the lost export demand when it comes to the ethanol. We still have weather to talk about in the next 2 weeks. I think that's probably the best thing that's happening now, is that we can refocus our attention back on weather for a couple weeks, and maybe longer if it stays dry. But we've got the relief from the trade issues, you know, off our back, and that monkey's off our back right now. So let's work on, if any rallies happen, you know, work on the idea that, okay, as prices go back up, you're not going to get as much demand on the export market because you'll start rationing again.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks for having me. Have a great weekend.
You too. That's Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. I don't do this often, but it's time for political commentary about the global trade disputes. Actually, just about the one with China, and only as it relates to agriculture. It seems to me the long-term goal for China is to remake global logistics. It's in the process of moving away from fossil fuel-based energy to something more green. Ethanol's in that mix, but really it's more likely about those cheap solar panels we can no longer import into the United States because of the trade dispute. China's moving to harness the power of the sun to provide energy for its economy. It also wants to feed its population, nearly 1.4 billion in size at this point, with about a third of them in the middle class. That's, for reference, the same size as the whole of the American population. To that end, a few years back, it purchased Smithfield Foods, our nation's largest pork processor. The goal, most likely, to move pork production to China. It already raises some 400 million hogs annually, but most of those have been in the backyards of peasants. Now they're being raised in what Kurt Kimmel called multi-story hog hotels a few weeks back. China also has purchased one of the three major companies left on the planet which provides farmers with seeds and chemicals, Syngenta. Bayer, the new owner of Monsanto, is headquartered in Germany, and Pioneer is owned by DowDuPont here in the United States. Well, I had a conversation with the former president of the university, Bob Easter, a few hours ago on the stoop outside of Mumford Hall. He goes to China often to teach them about pork production, and he pays attention to it. It's no secret the Chinese have been investing heavily into infrastructure. You might think of Brazil, but if you're China, something closer to home might work better. The African continent, and Ukraine, and a few other places. The long bet says the current trade war is helping China to remake global logistics. We had this conversation last night after I shut off the Commodity Week recorders. It might be a lot easier for them to feed all those hogs and ethanol plants that are now ramping up on the coastline if corn came from North America, or Ukraine, or South Africa, and soybeans came from Brazil and Argentina. Ports and ships and railroads are the bottleneck. You can solve that by controlling when a product becomes available. Two seasons, two crops, one set of ships. Did I say something about Ukraine? Oh yes, it's in the Northern Hemisphere, on the Black Sea. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Yesterday, we did record Commodity Week. Our panelists included Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri Marketing out of Morton, Illinois, Kevin Van Trump from the Van Trump Report in Kansas City, and Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. I started by getting a list of items we should discuss. Chip Nellinger was up first.
Well, we finally have some things to talk about that aren't trade-related, right? Wheat making an explosive move this week. Obviously, the European Union trade agreement. Weather, I think, is still there. I think people are starting to assume we've got this record crop in the bin, and we got some few weeks of weather to get through before the final tally is there. So those would be on the top of the list, I'd say.
Pete Manhart, anything to add?
Well, I think weather's the big one now, besides the wheat in the European Union and all the wheat around the world that helped drag everything up for a while. And today we went punk on the wheat a little, but I think weather here, everything looks really good. But you go out in it and there's areas that are starting to dry out or have been for 3 weeks, and that kernel depth isn't that great. And so I think the bushel number they're throwing around, to me, seem a little high.
Mike Zuzulo?
I guess wondering if President Trump's back where he belongs with his policy, being in Iowa and making out some new hats that say make our farmers great again and talking about the E15 all year long type of waiver. So that's one of the things that maybe we can talk about, whether we've got a low in place at this point because we don't have to worry about trade as much.
And finally, Kevin Van Trump, anything from your point of view?
Yeah, I just think, what's going to happen here with the August USDA report in a few weeks? I think it's kind of a next hurdle, and what we're going to do as far as marketing some of this new crop and maybe a little bit of old crop that we still have in the bin. So those are my two concerns.
I'll let you take the stage, Kevin. On the August USDA report, and we've mentioned this a little bit up front, everybody's concerned about what size this crop might be. Crop production numbers will be gathered here shortly by USDA. What do you think they'll show?
Yeah, I was kind of reviewing back. I remember last year from the July to August, they ended up actually lowering the estimate. I think we lowered it, I'm thinking it was lowered down just a shade, and then we took off and we raised it. The USDA raised it about 7 bushels from August to final, and that's how we ended up with the 176.6 record yield. But I think it's a different scenario. I feel like we went through pollination a lot slower. We went through fill a lot slower, and the kernel depth got a lot deeper. And I think some guys may have missed the yield a little bit, and they were too conservative on their estimate. And this year, maybe just the opposite. Maybe we go through pollination. We went through pollination real quick. We've maybe gone through fill quick in some areas. I've seen some guys counting some huge numbers on rows and some ear length and have been really firing out some aggressive yields. But maybe, I don't know. Maybe once the USDA flip-flops over from the trend-based analysis and goes to the survey-based and gets out in the field a little bit, maybe it's not as high as some guys think. I think that could be the wild card here in August on how they play it and move it forward. So I'm with Pete, kind of. I'm just not sure. I mean, I've had traders and buddies on the fund side that are tossing around 180 numbers, but I don't think it's there. But I guess we'll see how it plays out. So that's really what we're looking at in that upcoming report, because we think the USDA is going to offset that with a sizable jump in exports to 200 to 300 million bushels. And I think then you're sitting there, if they don't change, or they go unchanged, or they throw a wild card like last year on the July to August. I mean, it could get a little goofy there in the balance sheet on that upcoming report.
Hey, Mike Zuzulo, you're now in the number 5 corn-producing state in the nation, moving up the ranks, and you're a lot closer to some of those growing regions. Have you been out and about and been talking to clientele and taking a look to see what it looks like?
Yeah, I think the top-end yields in northeast Kansas are still on the books until you get to the Missouri River. At this stage of the game, because we did get crop-saving rains in terms of crop-saving to top-end yields. That's, based upon not just what I've seen, but also, more importantly, what clients have been talking about, Todd. But I think Kevin's point's really well taken, and I think it was Chip had brought it up as well. I think between the mindset that we have early in the show here, and the idea that I wanted to talk about when it came to the cash basis, especially for the soybeans, new crop cash basis is just not what it should be given the futures break we've seen. And so I feel as though that while we're still in a pretty wide trading range right now, we haven't broken out to either side of up or down, and we've carved out a major low when it comes to trade, if trade issues are no longer going to be an issue, and that's a big if. But my mindset is on rallies to hedge with known cost, bought puts, stick to the paper positions, and wait for the basis and wait for the yields and wait for the August report before you really let go of a lot of your cash crop and in the 18 market especially.
That's Mike Zuzlow. He and Chip Nellinger, Kevin Van Trump, and Pete Manhart all joined us on our Commodity Week program recorded yesterday afternoon, up on the website for you to listen to in its entirety right now. If you can stay with us on our home station this afternoon, you'll hear the rest of the program. Otherwise, it'll be on many of these radio stations over the weekend. You know, earlier this week, the United States Department of Agriculture announced a $12 billion plan to compensate farmers for damages done so far by the trade dispute with China and other nations. Here's part of what we know. The largest part of that money will be paid out to soybean producers, though direct payments will also be made for other commodities, including corn, wheat, sorghum, cotton, dairy, and pork. USDA Chief Economist Rob Johansen told reporters on the line the initial damage calculation has already been made.
We've calculated what the damage is to producers facing these illegal tariff actions. We are working out the specific details, and we'll be publishing that as part of a rulemaking action in a couple weeks. And that will have our estimated rates, as the Secretary mentioned. This will be playing out over time, and we do look to allowing the administration to successfully negotiate a deal here with our trading partners. And so the program will be flexible to allow that.
Again, Johansen says the financial damage part has already been calculated, though he also says specific details have yet to be published and or, quote, worked out. Should the trade disputes be settled, the program is meant to be flexible. This was not said, but it makes sense that a farmer who harvests and sells soybeans prior to the settlements would get a payment. One who sells after the settlement, they might not. Assistant Deputy Administrator for Farm Programs Brad Carman says FSA, the Farm Service Agency, will be responsible for the sign-up.
So we're going to allow producers, we're talking about a September sign-up, and it'll go probably for many months. So producers will have time to visit the FSA county office. And in order to run this program, we need producers to harvest their crops. So if producers that harvest their crops, like wheat, for example, is on the list, many of those producers have harvested already. They may be able to get their payment earlier than somebody like corn or soybeans who doesn't harvest till October. So, but we need producers to harvest to know their production before we can calculate a payment.
Recapping then. The bulk of the $12 billion is intended to compensate soybean farmers for damages to their market. The initial calculation has, it appears, already been made, but may be tweaked. Sign-up will be done at local FSA offices. Payments will begin once producers provide actual program and production figures to the FSA, and the program may change or end prior to payments being made should the administration settle trade disputes. By the way, as of July the 12th, U.S. farmers were expected to produce 4.3 billion bushels of soybeans this season. This is the Closing Market Report for Friday afternoon. We're now joined by Eric Snodgrass from Agribull Hape. First up, Eric, congratulations on the sale of the company.
Yeah, thank you.
That's fantastic. The good news is I think you're going to get to talk to us for a long time yet, so let's continue a look at the weather forecast. It's cooled down really nicely in our part of the world. Has that happened across the whole of the Midwest?
You know, it really has, and we've been pretty thankful for this because of how quick the season was. You know, we have parts of Illinois and parts of Indiana and parts of Missouri and Kansas that are approaching 400 growing degree day units ahead of what would be called normal, right? So therefore, that crop is 2.5, maybe 3 weeks ahead of schedule. So if we would have gone from silking to black layer quickly, we'd had to start worrying about just the overall condition of the crop. But this cool down we've had has been great. It's been compliments of a shifting ridge. We kind of pushed the ridge to the west. It's getting over there now. That's why it's been so hot in Texas all the way to the northwest. That's why California is burning right now. You know, so that shift is very favorable to Midwest agriculture, but it is really, really hot out to our west right now. And as long as that ridge stays there, we're going to be happy here in the center part of the country. And right now, it looks as though we may get pretty deep into that first week of August before I even start to see the models allowing some heat to return back to the middle part of the country here, right in Illinois. And when I say returning of heat, there's nothing right now in the long range forecast that makes me say, holy cow, we're going to be seeing some really windy days with some high temperatures that are deep into the 90s and no moisture. I'm not seeing that. It just looks as though we're going to go back, you know, to those middle to upper 80s, maybe some 90 degree days moving forward. So no big stresses, and we're going to get to enjoy maybe another 7 to 10 days of some of this cooler weather. And that honestly is really great.
Any pattern shift further out?
You know, when we look farther out, the areas that I'm most concerned about looking farther out will be how the crop finishes in parts of Indiana, you know, Michigan, Missouri, and southeastern South Dakota. Those will be the spots around the country that have not been getting the regular thunderstorms and have had the heat. So we kind of look at those locations as being, you know, pretty big dents into the size of the garden spot here. But when we look short term, we have some things that are going to be moving through the Corn Belt that are going to be kind of nice. We're going to be watching a system that's going to come out of like the Central Plains this weekend. It may get to Illinois Saturday night or Sunday morning, bringing us a chance for thunderstorms. And the deeper upper level trough that's all kind of forming around, it's going to hang around, you know, for several days. We have a chance of storms really Sunday morning, Saturday and Sunday morning through maybe Tuesday as that trough hangs around. Now, I'll tell you this, what that trough's going to do, though, it's going to go southeast. When it does that, we're going to continue just to bring a whole lot more rain from like Alabama over towards Georgia and then up the East Coast. And why I like that is the more moisture we get into that part of the country, the less susceptible they are to drought in the coming months. And therefore, we are less susceptible to drought because of the pattern that's happening down there. So that's all very good news for Midwest agriculture, even though it's not in the Midwest.
Hey, one final item. Once we get to the month of August, and I know it's the end of the hurricane season or start, but it's an active part of the hurricane season, and I always start to watch the coast of Africa at that point, thinking, hey, are we going to get something, a tropical storm of some sort that will bring me rainfall into Illinois, Indiana, to finish off a really good soybean crop? What do we see there?
Well, right now, the thing that we're having to watch is off the west coast of Africa, where a lot of these tropical systems are born, the sea surface temperatures are cool. They're cooler than average. Now, what does all that mean? Well, hurricane strength is directly tied to sea surface temperature. In other words, the hotter you make the ocean, the more powerful the hurricane can be. So we have that to deal with. And just historically, that suppresses hurricane developments. We don't even see anything developing really in the next 5 days. There's a couple of things we're going to be watching because you're right. You know, September 10th is the peak in hurricane season, but it really starts to ramp up once the month of August gets here. And so we always have to watch that because you could have one of these systems come right up the gut of the Mississippi River, you know, mid-September, and give you that great finishing rain or absolutely drench you later on in the season when you're trying to harvest. So the tropics are the wild card as we push through the rest of the season.
Hey, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
That, of course, is Eric Snodgrass. He is with Agripol. That wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.